What did God give that Adam? Remember chapter 1, verse 26, verse 28? I give you dominion over all the things that I have created. Over all that I've created. And to give you evidence of that, into the garden, chapter 2, into the garden, I bring all the animals. I now give you permission, Adam, to name all the animals. This is the epitome of dominion. I am going to have the right, Adam says, to name all the animals. So God gives, and that's why Satan, observing all of this, was very jealous of who had been placed in that position of dominion over all of creation. Thus he leads him through his covetousness to go into sin. But what did God do? He gave the first Adam dominion. What happens on the Temple Mount when Jesus Christ comes back? Go back to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. And let me show you something. This is a vision, a dream that Daniel has. He's probably around 75 years of age. It's 52 or 50 some years after he had interpreted the dream for Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2. God is going to give him a similar vision, different symbols to help him understand the coming Gentile world powers. In the process, he's going to send, most likely, Gabriel to come and interpret the dream that Daniel has. Let's look at a couple of phrases. Verse 13, Daniel chapter 7. And I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man come with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages shall serve him. His dominion is everlasting dominion. That word everlasting is olam, like El Olam, the eternality of God. As long as God is in existence, God is going to give Jesus Christ dominion. That which he gave to Adam in the Garden of Eden, now on the Temple Mount. Everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. And the kingdom is established on the Temple Mount in the city of Jerusalem. Go over to verse 27, chapter 7 of Daniel. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. And so, in the Garden of Eden, God gives Adam dominion. On the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, God gives Jesus, the last Adam, dominion. And that dominion is everlasting as long as God is going to be in existence. Now, the next two I'm not going to deal with a whole lot because we talked about them in two sessions separately. The next thing I want you to know common with the two was, or at least a connection between the two, the first sin took place in the Garden of Eden, chapter 3 of the book of Genesis. The cure for sin took place on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Remember my explanation? I hope you were here when we talked about it. If not, get a copy of the tapes. I talked about the Temple Mount extending across the Kidron Valley to the Mount of Olives, where that altar, without the gate, before the Lord, without the gate, a Sabbath day's journey. We're talking about 3,000 feet, 2,000 cubits. A altar that no man could eat of. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 10. Likewise, Jesus went to that spot. I submit to you, Christ was crucified. I'll not go that whole session again. Christ was crucified on the Mount of Olives next to the altar where they took the red heifer, and we spent that time studying that. But in light of that, go with me just a moment over to the book of Hebrews. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 9 just for a second. Let me rehearse again that what took place was that after the first sin, then the first sacrifice also, those two characteristics we're thinking about now, on the in the Garden of Eden. And they were also culminated on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Verse 11, chapter 9 of Hebrews. But Christ being come But Christ being come and high priest of good things to come by a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this building, neither by the blood of goats and of calves, but by his own blood, he entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. Remember what we're reading here. He entered once into the holy place. For if the blood of bulls and of goats and of the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifieth to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purged our conscience from dead works to serve the living God? We thought through that the other day. Jesus Christ shed his precious blood. It's greater than the blood of lambs, of goats, of bulls, and even of red heifers whose ashes are produced for the purification of the individual. And we talked about the ordinance of the red heifer and how on the day that he performed his first miracle in Canaan of Galilee, he took that ordinance back. Let's look just a few moments, though, at verse 24. Verses 24 to 28. There are three appearances of Jesus Christ here. Look first at verse 26. For then must he often have suffered. Well, go back to verse 25. Nor yet that he should offer himself often as the high priest entereth into the holy place every year with the blood of others. That's on the day of Yom Kippur, when he goes in to the Holy of Holies for the purpose of actually offering that blood sacrifice that would cover the sin for 1 year. So it's saying here that the high he offered himself, nor did he offer himself often as the high priest did, verse 26, for then must he often have suffered since the foundation of the world. But now once in the end of the world hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. What's it talking about? Go to verse 24. For Christ is not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. He did not enter into the Holy of Holies as the high priest did. He gave us access to the Holy of Holies by shedding his blood on Calvary's tree when the veil of the temple opened up. Look at verse 28. So Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. I believe this is teaching that when Jesus Christ comes back to fulfill every single activity at the temple, when he comes from over in Petra, having picked up Isaiah chapter 63, verses 1 to 6, picking up those survivors of those Jews, one third of the Jewish people, approximately 4 million people, who were protected in a place prepared by God, Revelation 12, 6, most likely Petra in southern Jordan. He picks them up. He brings them up back on the backside of the Mount of Olives, on the top of the Mount of Olives, across the Kidron Valley, through the Eastern Gate, into the temple, and guess where he goes? He goes into the Holy of Holies and the Feast of Yom Kippur is fulfilled. Not as the priest did once a year, but one time Jesus Christ enters into the Holy of Holies. He fulfilled the first four spring feasts of seven feasts altogether. He fulfilled the feast of Passover. He died on Passover. He fulfilled the feast of unleavened bread. He was buried, separated on unleavened bread. He fulfilled the feast of first fruits. He resurrected on first fruits. And I'm just giving you the bottom line, not all the information. He then, as promised, sent the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. There are three feasts left. Feast of Trumpets, I told you a moment ago. He comes on the Feast of Trumpets, not for the rapture of the church, but for the second coming of Christ. The trumpet is blown. The Feast of Trumpets, to call all the Jews for a solemn assembly in Jerusalem. That was the purpose of the Feast of Trumpets. Then he builds the temple. I told you there'd be a period of time. It's 10 days, the 10 awesome days between the Feast of Trumpets and Yom Kippur. But what happens? He arranges the city of Jerusalem the way he wants it. He builds the temple. All of these armies of the world are moving to the Jezreel Valley. He goes up, the Battle of Armageddon takes place. He walks, it says Isaiah chapter 63, verses 1, 2, and 3, all the way from the Jezreel Valley up a valley of blood, as high as the horse's bridle into Petra. He gets his Jewish people. He brings them back. This is all in a 10-day period. He comes in, and on the 10th day, on Yom Kippur, he walks into the Holy of Holies, as Hebrews chapter 9 says, and he fulfills Yom Kippur. You see, Passover, Pesach, was for individual salvation. Yom Kippur was for national salvation. Chapter 11, verse 25, Romans, and in a day they shall be saved. Yom Kippur, when in the end, once, not like the other high priest every year, once in the end of time, he walks in to the Holy of Holies, and he fulfills that ultimate sacrifice. Oh, by the way, there's 4 days of judgment. Those tribulation and Old Testament saints, those living Jews, those living Gentiles, and Satan, Antichrist, and false prophet. 4 days for those four judgments. And guess what? Feast of Tabernacles begins, and that is the millennial kingdom. That's why Peter said, hey, let's set up 3 tabernacles. That's not a monument. The word is sukkah. That's a thatched hut. That's what he was talking about in Matthew chapter 17. The scriptures, there's no prophecy or private interpretation. It fits together. And there it is, and he goes in. And so that first sin was taken care of by Jesus Christ on the Temple Mount. And that sacrifice was made manifest when he walks into the Holy of Holies on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And that's Ezekiel chapter 43 and verse 7, when he goes in to set up his kingdom.